Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Scotland are 2 from 2. Let's repeat that. We are 2 from 2. Operation Grand Slam is a go. And it is David, Matt and Alan back to look back at the absolute gubbing that we handed out to Wales and do a little bit of looking forward to the march on Paris. Alan, I last saw you standing next to the piano in fingers, belting out Rocket Man. How are you feeling?
And I'm still there, emotionally.
Mentally and emotionally still there.
No, it was great. I mean, you said literally, obviously, specifically a great match, but just broadly a great day also. And yeah, apologies. We were going to get the podcast out on Sunday night, but I left my laptop charger on a train, so couldn't do it, sadly. But maybe we weren't emotionally ready. You know, only the fact that it was 27 years ago that we last won two matches to open the 5/6 Nations. It was all a little bit much, even by Sunday night.
It was a little bit much. Matt, you had a slightly calmer Saturday evening, but you enjoy it all the same?
Yeah, well, for some context, it was due date for my our first baby. But yeah,
it's a reasonable excuse.
So it was allowed, no movement. So it was allowed out to celebrate the historic win, admittedly on the non-alcoholic beers. Yeah. And it is quite an interesting experience when you're with sort of 4 or 5 people who've been hitting it hard since about 2 p.m. But I thought everyone acquitted themselves quite well.
That's good. You left on the sort of the high moment that when our bald friend got called a pound shop, Dave Cherry. In the queue for Fingers Piano Bar. That was a real moment for everybody.
And also as a man who likes to think of himself as a pretty good looking chap as well. It was a great moment to leave.
You're saying Dave Cherry's not a good looking chap?
I don't think Dave Cherry himself would say that he's a good looking chap.
I tell you, the worst part of the weekend is the fact that Fingers Piano Bar left us on red when we slipped into their DMs.
Yeah. And then we rewarded them by going anyway. And I think was the final straw that £114 round from our Welsh friend who accidentally put it on his joint account and got a bit of a telling off from his wife as well.
Yeah,
just great stuff.
Yeah, great end to the night.
Well, enough of our absolute shit show of the early hours of the morning after Scotland's win against Wales. We will come on to talk about the game, but a quick reminder of where you can engage with the Thistle. If it's on Twitter, that's at Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. You can send us some emails. We've had some emails in there. That's thistlerugby@gmail.com. And our occasional newsletter, such as it is these days, is on Substack. But my God, when we write one, it is bloody good. So get that on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Matt, let's just get right into it. I'll come to you first because you were watching on TV, which is a very different experience, obviously, from watching it in the stadium. How good did we look on that TV screen? Because in the stadium, you know, you feel the emotion, you feel the sort of the swell of it all. But how did it look on TV?
I think once we got going from about the 50th minute mark, and actually I'd say for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the game, it was just clear that if we got our act together, our discipline was okay, we kept the ball, then we were far better than Wales. And I think that on paper, maybe we would have said that we were edging it, but the reality was that we were the far superior side. And then, you know, overall, we've got to be like delighted with the win and the result, obviously making history. And you heard Richie and Townsend saying that there's a lot of room for improvement. And I don't think that was just empty rhetoric. Like, I think there actually is quite a lot of room for improvement, which is quite encouraging. But yeah, as I say, when we looked pretty composed in that first 10 minutes, and then when we got things clicking into gear from the 50th minute onwards, it was genuine like joy to watch.
I thought it generally felt quite easy for the last sort of 25-30 minutes. I felt like, you know, Scotland were obviously doing a lot of great play, especially sort of via Finn, but it just felt like it all came quite easily to them.
Well, that was the thing, that watching it and the crowd noise actually from about the maybe 60th minute, when it was clear that, you know, barring a complete disaster, we were going to win the game and probably win it comfortably, that it seems as if the atmosphere actually kind of like went down a couple of notches, not in a terrible way, but that speaks to your point, exactly that everyone was just sort of expecting to see out the game and could sort of finally relax in the knowledge that we were comfortably better than Wales.
I agree with your point on the atmosphere. I think there were times when it wasn't flat, but it was just like, oh, okay, this is really comfortable. And it was particularly once we sort of saw off and got in at halftime, sort of having seen off that last 5 minute spell with George Turner in the bin, and Wales didn't manage to get sort of peg themselves back in front, which it looked like they might. And then the second half, we just sort of turned the screw. Yeah, the last 20 minutes, it was a real joy sitting back, having a can of Tennent's and watching Scotland sort of safe in the knowledge that we were going to win. It was weird, but very enjoyable. We should do it more.
I was trying to think in the Six Nations when that last would have happened, outside of obviously an Italy match.
When we beat Ireland in 17?
Nah, that was tight by the end. That was tight at the end.
Yeah.
Laidlaw.
We were still in the lead when Laidlaw kicked that penalty, though. I guess it was still tight, though.
Yeah, sort of within a score, though.
Yeah,
but no, rarely.
When we beat Wales that in that season as well, we sort of, it was quite tight at halftime and we pulled away.
Yeah, that's probably the main example. To be honest, probably England 2018, when we went in sort of like 21-3 up at halftime, and it never quite felt like we were gonna, especially with the last 20 minutes to go. But yeah, it was almost like uncomfortably comfortable.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
This is weird. I like it, but I don't like it.
I think it was a time when I was like looking at the scoreboard and I was like, we're 18 points ahead. And I was like, but we lost from 17 points ahead like not that long ago. So I can't really relax here.
Yeah, the ghost of 2010 still haunts everyone who watched that match.
I think particularly when, and we can come on to talk about it, but when Turner put the high tackle in on George North, I was like,
yeah,
this is a history repeating itself. There is a chance that he gets red carded here. I couldn't actually believe what was happening.
Yeah, we were quite lucky on that one. Great that it was only a yellow, because I agree, it felt like we might be going back down that dark hole again. I mean, should we start where everyone else has started and then we can go down niche rabbit holes? Matt, Finn Russell, particularly in the second half, one of the best performances you've seen from him?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing that people have come to realize in the last like 2 years in particular, that he is going to make mistakes, he's going to get things wrong. And I think in that first 40, he did some good things, but also it was actually quite similar to last week, that you know, he put that drop out in the full, A few of his kicks weren't really coming off. And apart from the missed pass that he got to Hugh Jones that put Jones on the outside of Dyer and eventually put Steyn in for the chance, apart from that, he sort of wasn't creating too much. But he just seems to be able to, like, shrug off. He just plays seemingly so much in the moment that it doesn't matter what's gone on before in the game. If he sees something and he executes, then it's likely to result in a try. And I think actually my favourite bit of the performance, in a sense, was obviously we know he can do the cross-field kicks and the offloads, etc. But I think it was around the 50th minute mark when the game was still in the balance. And he put in that 50-22 that got us the line out. And then I think it was Steyn that eventually scored off that line out. Just so nice. Like, sort of seeing both bits of his game there, the control and also the flair that we know he can bring. So, yeah, it was just an absolute joy to watch.
So it looks a little bit like Mark Dodson, maybe Tooney, and perhaps Finn as well, have been listening to our podcast where we've been sort of urging him and Finn to get on the same page and sort of for the good of Scotland. Because Finn's sort of in the, I think it was the Times and maybe in the offside line as well, his comments that their sort of relationship is in the best place ever. And how he's sort of matured because he's had a kid. Just some very wholesome stuff coming out of Finn. I'm loving it. It's good to see. And, you know, can Alan, Tooney and Finn stay best friends until the end of the Six Nations and maybe even the World Cup?
Do you think Dodson brought them both into the David Lloyd sauna for a sort of clear the air meeting pre-Six Nations? Just get everything on the line.
Read it in portions of the Riot Act.
Yeah, door locked, just like consistently, like getting the heat up. Like Finn was sweating before he even got in the sauna.
Yeah.
Just out. It's, I don't know. I don't, obviously Finn is saying the right words, but there's always a part of me that the way, just what he's saying, I don't quite believe it, but I'm kind of happy to just play along. All right. Let's just all play along till the World Cup. I think it's pretty clear that they don't have a particularly great relationship on a sort of personal level, but ultimately a lot of Tooney's decisions are working for Scotland. I think also in terms of the way that especially in terms of how they're able to kind of keep a level of performance into sort of the second half and beyond. And ultimately Finn has had probably 80 out of the 160 minutes have been, you know, really top drawer sort of world class standoff play, and he's kind of being extremely clinical in very key moments for Scotland and is really making that team tick, you know, obviously especially in the sort of second half against Wales. So don't quite buy it all, but let's all just, you know, put our heads in the sand and just move forward until it all inevitably crashes and burns in a couple of weeks' time.
Jake Tooney's just been like, look, Finn, I'm leaving at the end of the World Cup. Let's just all get along for 6 months, all right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I can't, but also just a side note, can't believe how much Finn's daughter looks like Finn.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I don't know if unfortunate is the right word, but it's mental.
Wow, Scotland women's 10 is going to be so good in like 18 to 20 years.
Can't wait.
And his missus is missus is a heptathlete, right, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible genes.
They've got to knock out a boy next. It's just going to be so good.
Imagine just talent with, like, an actual athletic body would be so good.
Exactly. Unbelievable.
I mean, obviously, the headlines and everything goes to Finn, the offloads, the memes, everything has just been Finn, Finn, Finn. But, you know, it was built upon another very, very solid sort of forward performance whereby we were getting solid ball in that platform, which is required. Another Richie Gray masterclass, Matt. Is he in the form of his life? Are we loving it?
I mean, it's hard to argue with that statement. He was really good. I thought him and Tashinza's battle at the lineout was really good, actually. And I think it was actually more even than I thought it would be. It's just his, like, work rate around the park for such a big guy. It must be must require so much effort and, like, stress on, like, his joints to put in the work that he does. And I think it was just before the half time, before Dyer had dropped that try opportunity, made this like mad covering tackle on Cuthbert, I think it was. Maybe it wasn't Cuthbert, one of the wingers.
Yeah, it was Cuthbert.
Just this like, mental engine. I remember when we spoke to Johnny BT the first time on this podcast, he was raving about like the great work rate. And I sort of was a bit like, oh, right. I just sort of thought of him as more line out operator, but maybe a bit on the flashier side of forward play. But I think that was a complete wrong preconception. And yeah, just the renaissance continues.
I saw it was Alan Dimmick put up that he's been the most kind of like influential kind of defensive line out operator of the Six Nations. So he's had what, four steals and one kind of disruption, which again, for a team where lineouts have never been a particular strong point, it's obviously great to great to have someone in that role. And also, I did see that I think Richie and Gilchrist are the only two second rows to have started a match and not missed a tackle.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. I think the other stats were as well. They've got that on the positive side of the ledger, but they're all the least carries per second rows and least meters made per second rows per carry. But I think that just goes to show, you know, their job is in the tight mainly and at the set piece.
Yeah, I like that. I think props the second row, just ruck and tackle. And don't even need dominant tackles, right? Just like stop them on the line and then just let like your Fagusons, your George Turners and your Richies just kind of go around trying to make yards and murder people. George Turner specifically.
I was going to say, George Turner again, turning in another high quality performance.
He's definitely got a high tackle. He's got that. He's definitely got that red card in him. The way he throws himself around, he is an absolute brutal.
I mean, him or Fraser Brown both have that, though. Are sort of two options at the moment.
And partly what makes them so great, right? I just think...
Yeah, they live on the edge, yeah. Not like... And they both look a bit insane. Not like... So, that's the problem. Johnny Matthews just looks like too nice a guy. He's never going to get a start at two for Scotland without that sort of crazy eye that you need to bring.
Same with Cherry, even further along. Yeah. Like, Cherry just looks like a really nice guy.
Chez does look a nice guy. Famously, from the top of the podcast, not a good-looking guy, though. Man.
I don't. I think he looks like, you know, a wee bit scary. Fully bald, you know. That's always quite scary.
Also, a wee bit
front,
scary,
in the front row as well.
But I guess the thing with Turner is we obviously always know how good he is in loose. Although I think he's probably taken it up a notch. Just in terms of the ferocity of him, how quickly he hits contact with sort of no real regard for his body, but then sort of layered on top of that, just being like super, super solid in the set piece. And ultimately, probably I would say going above his usual sort of average for club and country.
Well, I think particularly given he hasn't really played that much this season or as much as he would have wanted to. That was a bit of a worry before the Six Nations. But yeah, I agree. It seems as if maybe this is the Six Nations where, because Scotland are playing, started so well also, where people, commentators outside of Scotland are starting to take notice a bit and sort of actually appreciate him for the form that he's been displaying for a couple of years, to be fair.
Maybe George Turner becomes like our Johnny Sexton, where he like we only sort of like roll him out for like the big internationals and like one or two sort of club games a year.
Or Nick Haining, you mean?
Or Nick Haining.
Yeah, we've already got one.
Do you think, just on that, it feels like it's all just been a bit too much too easy. So much consistency moving from sort of game one to game two. Is there a Haining in Tooney? Just like a completely like left field Tooney tombola to come?
I think the interesting stuff's going to be in that you've got now Scott Cummings, Rory Darge, Ollie Kebble all back in full training at Glasgow. Whether it's a Haining out of left field or, you know, Cummings, you would have said 6 months ago he was a nailed-on starter with Johnny Gray in the second row. Rory Darge made his breakthrough game against France, offered something different on the floor. Hamish Watson potentially coming back. There's some high-quality problems for the France game, I would say.
Agreed. It'd be interesting to see who gets game time this weekend for Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, for purely narrative sake, it would be fucking hilarious if Nick Haining starts at 8 against France. Matt Ferguson absolutely tearing up trees, and they're like, sorry, we're bringing in Nick. He's going to give us a really solid 22 minutes and be completely fucked, and then we'll bring you on. Be so good.
That first half of Ireland 3 years ago, I became such a Haining fan. I was like, I never realized how good this man was.
We all believed.
That was wild.
I know.
I mean, sticking it in the front row, our favorite place after talking about Turner, Sanders' return, Matt, worthy of his place, coming straight back into the starting 15.
I think eventually, his start to the game was a wee bit slow. Seemed to be penalized at scrum time, and I think. In previous matches, Wyn Jones on the Welsh side has sort of had the upper hand, which looks a bit worrying when the game was tight. And he also seemed to give away a series of kind of slightly brain dead penalties when it was clear early on that if you just let Wales have the ball, they weren't really, and didn't give away penalties, they weren't up to much. They weren't really going to get anywhere. So I was getting a bit frustrated with him, but then sort of settled down a bit, got himself into the game. 17 tackles from tight head prop, zero missed, is pretty mental. And I think his carries were pretty effective as well. And it seems as if the scrum probably weren't too many scrums in the second half, but seemed to go okay. So overall, considering he was coming back from an injury, pretty good showing.
I think the two main issues in that first half, because you're right, it never felt when Wales were going through the phases, especially sort of outside of Scotland's 22, that it felt like Wales were going to make substantial sort of breaks and gains. It was kind of Scotland doing penalties and giving Wales field position that was letting them sort of move up and up the pitch. But the two issues were, one, the scrum, and the second one was at the breakdown. In that first half, Wales were winning. And I guess probably the heartening thing from the second half was they managed to sort both those problems. And in the second half, scrum wasn't an issue. We were potentially in the ascendancy, but we weren't losing. And then at the breakdown, I don't know whether we were putting in more men or whether we were just protecting the ball in some way a little bit better, but we didn't seem to be giving away just that that cadence of just kind of breakdown penalties that the first half just kept bringing.
So the other Ferguson on the pitch, I mean, Alan, is this a real sort of coming of age tournament for Matt Ferguson? 20 tackles this week to add to his 27 from last week. He's on track, if he keeps up this, to get the most tackles completed in any Six Nations Championship. I believe from somebody on Twitter that is 85, and he's already on 47 from two games.
Bloody heck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Could be the first triple dig Six Nations tackler.
Great to see that. And do you think that you were just a little bit premature on your call for Matt Ferguson for the Lions? You just went one too early.
I know, I did. If it hadn't been for COVID, I would have been there.
Yeah, it's true.
would have absolutely crushed it. But no, I think he's good, and I think, you know, clearly it's kind of his defensive stats that are sort of getting him all the plaudits. But I think even in an attack, he of all the forwards is the one that seems to, especially in kind of the tight, be able to get on the front foot. And you know, there was a couple of examples where he's kind of coming off Ben White, and he just has the footwork to be able to even find kind of like the softer shoulder in the tight, which I think is kind of like a really, you know, a really great trait to have. So I still think he's probably like a tier below like your Doris and your Aldreets, but he's definitely, you know, continuing on a pretty like amazing trajectory. And I think, you know, start of the autumn, we were having the big conversation about him or Bradbury, and it, you know, it's ultimately just not a conversation anymore, right? He is the starter for the foreseeable future.
I think it's interesting, the comparison with a Doris or an Aldreet, because I think we want from our number eight a Doris or Aldreet type, but I actually think that Ferguson is evolving into like a slightly different player, whereby, you know, he still makes the carries. He was the top carrier for Scotland, but 50 metres. And I saw some other stats that show that, you know, carry effectiveness overall, so amount of carries and metres per carry so far, out of back rows. He's sort of in the middle of the pack. But then you look at the amount of tackles that he makes in every game, and it's like absolutely massive. And maybe he's just more of a kind of 6/8 in some sense, and he's not necessarily the person that we're looking to the whole time to get over the gain line, because that's maybe just not actually the style that suits Scotland really. We want to move it away slightly from the breakdown, and even let someone like Doohan do a lot of the big carrying.
I guess the fear is sort of looking forward to France and Ireland. Do we think that then becomes a bit of an issue? Because you're right, I don't think we haven't really been sort of punching holes kind of.
Yeah. I mean, totally. But I mean, it's just, I'm just making the point that like for Ireland at the weekend, Omani, Manderfleer and Doris made 26 tackles in total and did fix make 26 or 26 last week in one game. It's just maybe like they're up to slightly different roles. I expect them to completely replicate the particularly the carry stats. But I agree, I think if there's one thing that you take from Ireland is the footwork that all their forwards before they carry try and shift the point of attack. And I think Ferguson is very good at that as well.
No, and I think Jamie Ritchie's improved quite a lot of that in that respect as well. Do we think every match of Six Nations is gonna end with a Jamie Ritchie turnover pen?
Would be great.
And also, no one's really talking about George Horn's tap and go, which, you know, if he hadn't been pulled back, I wonder if he was. I have never not been able to see kind of a camera angle, but he was pulled back by one of the Wales players and they got another penalty. But I wonder if he hadn't been pulled back, whether he was off and it was going to be like a 90 meter sort of or at least a potential sort of 90 meter try. I love the ambition.
I think I get the sense when he stood up afterwards, he was like laughing. That he just did to fuck with the Welsh, and that like he knew that the temptation at that point would be to tackle him, and like not necessarily that someone would get a yellow card, but they'd get another penalty. I or maybe he thought he could go the whole way. I don't know. He looked good when he came on.
To be fair, it would have put us top of the Six Nations, right?
Yeah.
Points difference. Maybe he knew, man.
He knew when we get to the end of, when we beat France and then draw with Ireland and then lose to Ireland on points difference, we'll rue the day.
Speaking of people that looked good when they came on, Blair Kinghorn called into action an awful lot earlier than he would have expected. Stuart Hogg failing an HIA probably only after about 10-15 minutes, but BK15. I think we just wasted a lot of time with him at 10. We should have focused on him at fullback, you know. I can play.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel as if pretty much everybody from the outside was saying the same thing when the whole time this experiment was happening, that we said it till we're blue in the face, like all the things he was doing from 10 he could do equally well if not better from fullback, and he's had two shots in the Six Nations and like showed everyone that that's the case.
I want the Kinghorn tell-all. I know we're not going to get it until at least he's retired, but I just want to know like what he was thinking when this was all happening.
Yeah, agreed. Whether he's, you know, maybe he said, I've always wanted to play 10. I think it's my best position. I don't know. Looks like he's pretty happy at 15.
I kind of feel like Mike Blair sold it to him and he maybe just got caught up in it all. And now everyone's like, let's just move on.
I think it was all rolled into like a new, was it all sort of around the time, like a new contract as well. They're probably like, look, Blair, we're going to be an extra $100,000. You're going to play a bit of 10. And he's like, this is fine, guys. I'm chilled. I don't really care.
There isn't much of a better sight than when Kinghorn comes onto the ball at pace and he's such like a long rangey.
Oh, his stride length is so insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so different to George Horn. Every one of Kinghorn's strides must be like three George Horns. and I think he's fucking quick. Like
He's
so quick.
Hit the ball at pace, and you know that they were just, especially in the second half. Obviously, in the second half, just Finn was whipping that ball out wide. Him or Tuipulotu were just whipping that ball out wide, and kind of Jones, Kinghorn, and Doohan were just making easy yards every time.
Yeah. 110 meters from Kinghorn off the bench.
Ugh.
is mental. So,
would have been a great super sub in the fantasy game.
So yeah. Jealous of people with him as a super sub.
I guess it leads to the question. Let's say even if Hoggy does recover from his HIA, you handing Kinghorn the 15 jersey for France, or do you think that's one step too far? We've got to keep the faith with Hoggy.
Tough one. I think you stick with Hogg, provided he's fit. You could make a case for either, but I like Kinghorn coming off the bench. I think he's a good option overall.
Yeah.
Versatility. And then I just wonder if it seems if Hogg this tournament so far, and the Welsh game is a write off, but he's just doing he's being solid. He's kicking quite well. Reasonable under the high ball. That maybe you need that for the France game, particularly at the start of it, where it might be a bit of a cagey affair, a little bit tight, and just provides you with a little bit more experience and solidity from the back.
I think I agree. There's part of me that loves the idea of Kinghorn, but you got to remember that he's literally played like 80 minutes of fullback in the last 2 years, and he has looked really good in those in those 80 minutes. But it feels like a stretch to then be starting him based solely on those 80 minutes and coming in for ultimately who's probably Scotland's sort of greatest player of the last 10-15 years, right? I think Hogg again still coming back a little bit from injury and is in the Six Nations anyway a bit of a big game player, so I think if he's fit, go with Hogg.
I think I'd be surprised if Kinghorn got the same opportunities in the outside channels against France as he did against Wales as well. Not to take away from his performance, but it's probably not going to be that kind of game.
Agreed. And look, as I said, Wales are busted flush. I said it a couple of weeks ago that like their players about going strike. Welsh rugby is in a complete disarray. So I guess it's then
how much... We beat them so badly, they're considering industrial action. It's unbelievable.
Mike Lynch is outside the Millennium Stadium.
They're literally considering their contracts. They're like, we can't do this anymore. The working conditions are too bad. That's how badly we beat them. Incredible stuff.
I guess it's then how good was that second half? Because we played really badly in the first half and we were still 13-0 up. And, you know, we went in 13-7 after not playing that well and being a man down for 10 minutes. And then we sort of opened up a little bit and we sort of managed to bash on a sort of another 22 points. Yeah. So I guess it's just then how much was that second half a reflection of how poor Wales are versus how good Scotland were?
Yeah. I think as much as we enjoy not only indulging in the hype, but really like stoking the hype of Scottish rugby, like I think we beat an England side that is like a scratch team under a new coach and then a really, really terrible Wales team. I do. I'm nervous about a rude awakening in Paris.
I do agree. I would say though that at the same time Wales could be a very bad side, and I think they have been. Well, maybe not 2 years ago, but last year as well, and we lost them in Cardiff, but we still managed to find a way to lose. So I think it is still a sign of how much we've improved, in a sense.
Yeah.
That even though it looked at a point around that 35 minute mark that Wales knew what they were doing. They were trying to get us into scraps, slow the game down, make it scrappy, kick the ball a lot. And in the past, we've been dragged down to a level and lost. And the fact we didn't do that, the fact we still had ambition and executed really well when we moved the ball wide, the line-out was still solid. I think it's, you know, you could take that as a sign of progress, I suppose.
Yeah. I think two things can be true. We have been good, but I do think we haven't been tested maybe as much as we thought. Like Wales, you're right though. Wales were terrible when we went to the Millennium Stadium last year and we still lost. So we have moved on.
That's fair.
Sorry, I was looking for some stats and I've just seen that Donald Trump has made a statement about Nicola Sturgeon resigning. I urge everybody to go and read it because it's fucking mental. Sorry. not related to Scottish rugby, but it really took my breath away. Please go and have a look at it.
Rogue and Trump uses Scottish nationality to become the new first minister rather than president.
That'd be
a rogue
banter age.
It is the banter age.
Trump in the royal box next to our sweet Princess Anne.
I guess a question for you. I know that the Finn offloads getting a lot of press, but the Finn crossfield for the Kinghorn try, I think, is better.
Yeah,
agreed.
Totally.
Agreed. I think quite a few players, you know, potentially some of these podcast hosts, could do the Finn offload. It's really good, but I even think he would be like, yeah, I do that in my sleep.
Yeah, that is his thing, really. He does that all the time, yeah, especially kind of like down the right wing, kind of pop out the right hand.
But I agree that the crossfield kick, to do it on the run, to not set your feet, to take the weight off it enough, land right in Doohan's breadbasket, there's not a lot of people who can do that, for sure. I don't think any of us could do that.
There's something about the little kind of like dink kind of half court crossfield as well. It's just so great.
It's so nice. Do you think Doohan has become a better rugby player in that he's not just, you know, a berserker that can just carry, but like he's taking these balls, he's passing them inside, he's showing like little touches a bit more that is like, I suppose that his softer skills have gotten a little bit better, like, and they're adding to his game. It's making him even more of a, like, a potent threat.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm still like, I'd still worry against Ireland or France if, and this is probably what Ireland will do, just Sexton will stick bombs up on him all day.
Yeah.
And you're probably not that confident a lot of the time, but it's, I don't know if he's improved that much. I think he's always had the ability to offload pretty well. And his pass to Kinghorn, I think we've seen that kind of thing before, just because his mitts are so massive. It just seems as if in the last two games in particular, and in the autumn probably for a bit, Scotland just actually managed to get the ball into his hands a bit more. Hey ho, look what happens when you do that. Like, absolute chaos. The only guy that could tackle him on the Welsh team was Chinza.
Yeah. And he's averaging 10 defenders beaten per match at the moment.
Yeah, I saw like there was a top 10 list of, because Capuoso beat 16 players that weekend or something, which is a record, and it was since Six Nations began in a single match, and it's all these like great names like Castagnet and I don't know if Shane Williams is on there, and Doohan's on it like three separate matches. Like, it's like, excuse me, and I think, you know, one or two of them are against Italy, but it still at the weekend whenever he ran, it seemed like he beat at least two or three men.
Yeah,
I would say the one thing I felt that every time the ball got into Doohan's hands, there's that like palpable like sort of electricity around the stadium. Like, people are so excited when he gets the ball, and I can't really remember a Scotland player ever eliciting that response from like a crowd. It's quite something.
Maybe Hoggy in his like real prime, coming on the ball at pace. But I agree, Doohan's just sort of like next level, because people even have that feeling when he's not got a lot of space, right? Because you just know that he can just brush people off so easily.
Yeah, he's bloody good. Speaking of bloody good, Hugh Jones, that guy, he is back playing good rugby again.
Yeah. Both it running and distribution.
Yeah, and defending. He's like, I've seen your memes. He's like, I've seen your comments about me being bad at defense, and I'm taking this personally, guys.
He's seen it on defense, and also, I don't think he's been on holiday for like a year.
I haven't seen him be on holiday for a while.
That guy has been locked down to the UK, sort of, maybe he's reduced like the five holidays down to like two. He's like, I'm only knocking out two holidays a year because I've seen the memes. I agree on the defensive point. I guess, again, it's just how much has he been really challenged and stretched. Although, look, not, you know, North was in his prime, like a pretty world-class operator and runner. But I guess it would be interesting, again, at the weekend when you've got, like, Fiku and Pino sort of attacking that sort of outside channel. That's where it becomes, you know, you're playing up against, like, some of the best players in the world, right?
Bring back Chris Harris for France?
It's an interesting one.
I know you're probably the wrong person to ask.
Yeah.
I don't think you...
Yeah.
You can't countenance him ever playing for Scotland again.
Yeah, that's why you're talking about Hugh Jones so much. I think he should stick with it. I think that what last two games have shown, what he brings in attack, I think the way he's playing as well, he brings the best out of Tupelotu, Doohan, Steyn, and even Russell to an extent, I think. I think that Russell knows that he's gives him a bit more of an option outside Tupelotu. And the outside arc that he took was so nice as well. And just the way that Harris, for all his strengths, is just never going to give you that. And the fact that he has been defending reasonably well, I don't think there's much of an argument for dropping him, really. Maybe Harris has done so well in the past against like even the likes of Vakatawa, so possibly in that regard, but I think you should stick to it.
And Tupelotu undroppable?
It's quite well. I remember after Cardiff last year, and I kind of thought, yeah, this guy's like a decent club player, but he's pretty one-dimensional and he's not got enough for international rugby. And once again, I mean, what do we know? He's been like so improved this season. He's been absolutely class. And once again, just seems to link so nicely with Russell and actually just make him tick on the whole.
Great. This comes across really well as well. Seems like a great lad. Just loving life in Scotland.
Very disappointing reports about his brother committing to Australia.
Oh, I know.
I think it should just be like, look, we'll give you a gig this summer. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, you think Eddie Jones is picking you anytime soon, Moses? Absolutely fucking not.
Exactly.
Who else have we... Who haven't we talked about?
Kyle Steyn's the other one that
Kyle Steyn, of course.
Who I think is just... I don't know. He's been a lot better than... I think we all could appreciate him, how good he is for Glasgow, but...
Yeah.
He seems to have just taken to Six Nations rugby really, really well. And it's not just the try scoring. Like, his defence is really solid. No. And I think his work under the high ball is so really, really good as well. Yeah, yeah. He seems like one of those, like, coachable players. So if he gets into an environment, then he's, like, pretty good to work with. And a good coach like Townsend can take him to another level, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Two tries. Deserve them both. I mean, walk-ins, but fucking good.
No, he has looked really good, and I think it has got to the point now where unless Darcy kind of like plays for Edinburgh the weekend and scores sort of three tries, I do think against France and even Ireland, you stick with that, with Steyn and Doohan on the wings.
I'm waiting to see Doohan like manhandle Mac Hansen.
Oh.
Guy, that little kid, what is he all about?
That's got to be like the main focus. Just Doohan v Mac Hansen. I don't get
it's
Mac
It's incredible
Hansen.
That Ireland are just like walking around with this massive chink in their armour. They're just like, this guy. Like, everywhere else, they're unbelievable. Then they're like, fuck it, let's play Mac Hansen, see if we can still win.
They are on opposite wings as well.
Yeah. No, exactly. It literally just needs to be like miss two every time Doohan just runs straight at him.
This is when Mac Hansen's going to score a hat-trick against us. It's my fault.
Definitely.
And then obviously the one we didn't speak about was obviously Crosby. Relatively quiet match. Kind of probably lost a bit of the breakdown. Wasn't able to really sort of assert himself. And then obviously had to go off for a part when Turner was yellow carded. So Fraser Brown could come on. It's... it was a bit of a tough match for him.
It's a tough one. You know, he ground it out. You know, he was making his tackles, but it wasn't... I don't know. I wonder if Hamish Watson comes in for the France game.
Tom English, or either Tom English or Andy Burke, seemed to insinuate that for this weekend, he wasn't actually fit to play. He made a comment on them. Watson wasn't fit to play. So it'll be interesting to see whether he starts for Edinburgh. Although, look, I saw him. He clearly just come out of a wee gym sesh at the Village, and he looked very swollen, big.
Would he say the same thing about you?
I'd say very I was big. He'd say I was big.
And swollen.
Yeah.
The face was swollen.
Yeah, unhealthy, swollen. I still think Crosby did what was expected of him. Once again, considering he only played 40 minutes, he made 12 tackles, which is more than Richie, for instance. It just seems like maybe he didn't get enough of a shot, but the carrying game that we've come to expect from him at Edinburgh, he just hasn't been able to get going yet. And it's not been like that much of an issue in the match, but I wonder if that'll come with a bit more confidence and time. But yeah, I agree. A point around the breakdown, it seemed as if we lost out to Rafael and Morgan in particular. And I think just having Watson in there would get you maybe two turnovers a match that could be pretty crucial against someone like France or Ireland.
Question for you. How much should the SOU just pay Rassing to not let Finn play at home against Breve? It's like, Rassing, you're at home. Breve are like bottom of the table, but they do have like probably got like a couple of quite big lads. Just here's like 10 grand. Just let it be. You'll beat them. Like Breve aren't beating you out in Paris. I feel like that's a worthwhile investment.
I think maybe 10 grand's worthwhile. Yeah.
How much would you pay them?
20 grand.
I was thinking maybe 25, maybe more.
Yeah, 100%.
SOU's flush. It's fine.
Yeah, especially now they've sold out Italy.
Is it sold out?
Yeah, they just announced that Italy was going to be another sold out Murrayfield.
25 grand is only two tables in the top bit of hospitality in Murrayfield.
100%. Like, if Finn goes down against Breve, that will just look like the dumbest. I mean, maybe Rassing wouldn't accept anything, right? But it feels like there's a deal to be made, especially because Rassing are playing a bottom of the table team, or like second bottom at home. It just feels like, you know, that's not the game that you want Finn going away for. Yeah. So
we're playing France next, though.
Well, that is true. Oh, yeah.
FFR are not going to let that happen.
Gattier's like he has to play
80 minutes.
He's got a counter offer.
I was just thinking,
do you remember when whatever happened? Didn't the SRU have like a wee NFT project going for a while? I made that up.
World Rugby did.
Oh, was it World Rugby?
World Rugby
and Ryan Wilson.
And Ryan Wilson still doing the NFTs.
Yeah.
I wonder if they made any money from that.
It was sort of like a John Terry style NFT, wasn't it? Ryan Wilson's one.
Oh, was it?
His Twitter page is still an NFT of like some weird looking cartoon character, I think.
Sorry, John Terry or Ryan Wilson?
Ryan Wilson, yeah.
All right. It's interesting. No, World Rugby definitely had an NFT strategy.
Rugby, yeah, sorry.
Since we're doing AOB, I had one from the Murrayfield experience. Alan, you and I talked about this, but they need to get the timings of Loch Lomond pre-match right.
Yeah.
Because everyone's standing there. There's at least one verse too many before kickoff.
Yes. No, just, agreed.
Like it reaches its peak and then it's like, oh God, we've got to go again.
Yeah. No, about 20 to 30 seconds before that kickoff, like Loch Lomond was being blasted out. And yeah, it sort of dissipated a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they do about that, but consider this constructive criticism, SRU, and a bit of feedback. I imagine they're just doing it to line up with the TV, but yeah, it really is odd.
Was it on ITV? ITV just needed to get that final like motorway advert where the guy kind of like accelerates.
Yeah, the motorway adverts are so weird.
So weird.
They're so bad.
Yeah, they're so crap. I know.
I was watching. There was for the England game. Like some of the adverts were like Viagra and like incontinence. Like pads. Yeah. And I was like, man, rugby's demographic is fucking terrible.
Like male, was it not like male incontinence nappies? Like nappies.
Yeah, it was like men's nappies. Yeah, and like, Viagra.
I'm sure there's a need for that, but. Why? How has it got on primetime TV?
Well, it must be like, what is the demographic of people watching this rugby on a Saturday afternoon? And it is like clearly old men.
Old
who
English
can't
men
get it up
gout.
And are pissing themselves.
True.
So yeah, maybe that's why we need Roc Nation.
I mean,
do you think Roc Nation had something to do with Beyonce playing at Murrayfield?
No.
Definitely.
That's not how these things work. Yeah, she's playing at the Stadium of Light. I don't think she's got that high standard.
I know this is not. This is what does Beyonce do in Sunderland?
Like,
what?
Oh, she's,
I want to know them. Yeah, I know, but where does she stay? Like, does she stay nearby, or does she do it from London?
Oh, I think she's in and out, like to London, back and from London. Yeah. Private plane or like, I don't know, chopper or something.
Yeah, Teesside Airport.
Yeah, like in and out.
Backstage at the Stadium of the Light. Do you think she's even got like a green room, or if she's literally just like, I'm gonna walk onto stage, guys?
Yeah, I think she's basically straight from the tarmac. Sure, yeah.
Even
yeah,
at Murrayfield, yeah. Do you think she's hanging out in one of the suites, or do you think she's just like, nah? Edinburgh's quite nice, but
she could be hanging out in the Thistle Suite.
She could be in the Thistle Suite.
Yeah, part of the deal. Dodson's got to have 2 minutes face to face time with Beyonce.
And the Calcutta Cup.
Yeah.
Photo with Beyonce, the Calcutta Cup would be really good.
That would be really good, content-wise.
I don't think this is the invisible hand of Rock Nation working behind the scenes.
They were like, in charge of the Super Bowl halftime show, apparently.
They were like, Jay-Z, Luke, just tell Beyonce she's doing Murrayfield, all right? Just do us a favor. And then if we can get Raven Hill in, that'd be also great.
Yeah, exactly, Raven Hill. I guess the Stadium of Light does sound quite good if you're presented to it totally cold. Like, where are we playing? Stadium of Light. Great. I'm in. I think we have digressed quite a large way here.
We're going to do a preview pod next week, so we don't need
to. We're
going to
do a preview pod.
Yeah.
At the moment, France are, I think, 6 or 7 point favourites. So we will dig into that.
Which is kind of the same as what England were, right?
Yeah.
It's about what England were, yeah. Scotland are now, we've got, Ireland are now like runaway favourites to win the championship. But our odds have come in from like really long to like, obviously we're 2 from 2, so we're quite short odds now to win it.
There you go. A few people have got the Grand Slam. I think it's like 50 to 1 or something. Nice little bet.
Could be a tasty little one. We will see. But yes, we will be back next week to do a preview pod for France. It might just be Alan and I. Matt is, of course, waiting on his child to arrive. We do it from the maternity ward, Matt, or how much sort of time do you need around that, do you think?
Yeah, maybe it depends how, I don't know, gassed up my partner is. Maybe I can sneak something in.
Yeah, I suppose it depends, doesn't it? There's a lot of variables there.
Yeah, but I'll try my hardest.
Well, yeah, it's once in a lifetime things, first child and Scotland being 2 from 2 in the Six Nations, so there's a couple of big moments to consider there.
Exactly.
But until then, follow us on Twitter at @ThistleRugbyPod, on Instagram @Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and send us your ramblings into the mailbag thethistlerugby@gmail.com, and subscribe. And of course, I forgot to do it at the top of the show, I need to do it right now, you need to join our Fanzo League, which you can win pints of Guinness by predicting the results of the Six Nations. We've got, I think, almost about 600 people in there. My brother is third in the world at Fanzo.
What?
He got 2 results spot on this weekend.
Jesus Christ.
I know. So ridiculous.
Is he winning our league then?
I think so, yeah. He's drowning in free Guinness.
He's not
even. The streets of North Berwick are running black at the moment. It is extraordinary.
He's second in our league. Someone is a point ahead of him.
Oh, really?
They must be like,
they must be doing in the Fanzo Global one. I think Andrew's like third or fourth. Yeah, there you go. So get yourself onto Fanzo, and we need to draw. We need to put in the draw for the people who are going to win the tickets for Scotland, Italy, because that is now sold out as well. So keep an eye on our social channels. If you were in our Fanzo league before the kickoff against England, 2 weeks ago, you were entered into a draw to win tickets for Scotland versus Italy. So we will get that draw done, and we will announce the winner for that in the coming weeks. So plenty to look forward to, and Scotland march on towards the Grand Slam. Cheers, and we will speak to you very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.